The hole that I am dreaming of is a par four through the woods with OB on the left and OB on the right. Very demanding tee shot with a little bit of a knoll about 40 feet off the tee. You have to throw whatever is your most straight fairway driver, and you have to try to finish straight. It's a super demanding throw. On the right side, you have a golf fairway, and on the left side, you have the thick woods, eventually leading to a ditch that contains a creek. The second shot is usually a turnover backhand or maybe a forehand into a pretty guarded green with a lot of trees short right of the basket, so the miss is left or long.
I'm at Harvey Penick, hole 18.
Bing, 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 bing.
Oh, thank God. There's a creek. Way left.
Oh, wow.
That's
the
my
funny thing
hole.
Is, I thought about bringing that hole up if it was my turn this week, because that hole had a lot of pain and suffering on it.
Yeah.
Had a lot of pain and suffering for us. I didn't miss the cut on that hole, but it felt like I did. I missed the cut by the tournament ending on that hole.
Welcome to the Crushed Pepper Podcast, episode 11?
12, I think.
Episode 12, I think.
Episode 12. We are post MVP's Open at Austin, and we are the cut missers, and we are all in different states again. How does it feel? Off week? What you doing?
I'll start. Currently, I am in sweet home Alabama, Roll Tide. Just got here yesterday. I spent an extra 2 days in Austin, which was very nice. Got to go to Barton Springs and eat some more barbecue. And it was a 13-hour drive from Austin here to Alabama. And, you know, I'd be lying if I said I wasn't a little bit depressed about this past weekend. It's been a little bit of a bummer, but that's disc golf for you, and I'm sure we'll get into it more as the podcast goes on. But yeah, off week, basically an hour and a half from Nashville, so ready to go on Nashville, more or less. So, yeah. What about you guys?
I'm back home in Massachusetts. I got home yesterday after a little bonus trip I got to do, which is still on the secret side of things, right after Austin. So it's been
It got leaked in the last episode. Barely.
Really?
It just said where you were going.
I think it was cut out.
Oh, I don't remember.
I heard it at the end.
Well, then it is what it is. We don't have to talk about it right now, but
Simon went
to
Hawaii.
Super nice. Yeah, super nice to be back home. It's just nice as Emmett gets a bit older. He like gets the concept of me leaving and me coming back. So it's always very sad leaving, of course, but it makes it so much better to come home and see his excitement and happiness. It's like the best thing ever. So yeah, just excited to sleep in my bed for 6 nights I get before headed back out to Nashville. And yeah, I have a packed schedule at home. Got to get a lot of things done with the house, with the course, and with the family. So yeah, excited for an off week. And Joey, what you doing?
I am in Jonesboro, Arkansas. There's a 2-day A tier on Friday, Saturday here. Obviously, former Pro Tour stop. And they're actually doing some really cool stuff right now at the course, preparing for next year's Pro Tour stop. And they have a new 18-hole wooded course that they've carved into the other side of the... If you think of where we... That dirt road we drove in on, basically the entire left side of that is now like gearing up to be in maybe 3 or 4 years a championship level wooded course called Towering Oaks. So there's a lot going on there. They're redoing the pond down by on the island hole. They're putting a big retaining wall around all of it and raising the water level and taking out the swamp. So there's a lot of cool stuff that Brad's got cooking up there. I am throwing this week for the first time in a month. I'm not going to play the tournament, but the last 2 days I've thrown shots pain-free. So that's been great. Only one of our touring little group of three is playing this week. Kyra is going to compete Friday and Saturday, and then Sunday we'll drive to Nashville. So yesterday, yesterday we went down to Memphis, Tennessee. Maria has become a huge Elvis Presley fan. And so we went and toured Graceland, which I've never done. I've done everything else in Memphis that we ended up doing yesterday, but yeah, we got to go see the home of the King of Rock and Roll, and it was pretty crazy. It was pretty great. I had a great time, and definitely, thanks to Maria, have been turned on to a bit more of his music, especially his later music. It's really, really impressive. So we had an all-timer tourist day yesterday in the home of blues.
I stayed in his hotel a couple of years ago in Memphis. I forget what it's called, but it's the Elvis-themed hotel, and it was definitely an experience I would recommend. Very cool. Elvis, legend.
Should we talk about Austin a bit?
Let's get into the pain.
Well, let's start with hole 18 at Sprinkle Valley. Let's talk about that hole. I want to hear your guys' thoughts.
You want to hear my thoughts?
Yeah, go for it, Eagle.
I don't have any strong opinions on that hole. We, as always, when we are talking amongst our colleagues, everyone has differing opinions. I remember at the Airbnb, Eli Swanson and Harry Chase were going back and forth on whether it's fair or unfair. And I could see both sides of the coin, and I don't even think either side of the coin is right or wrong, but if I were to design that hole, I'd play from the FPO pad, and I usually watch Ezra, Aderhold, and Aaron Gossage's practice rounds, and generally I agree with what they say, and Aaron made a good point. I think around the basket could be hazard, so if you play from the... If you play from the FPO tee pad, you can bomb a shot to a position where you might consider going for eagle. And if there's hazard up near the basket, then that's going to incentivize people to be a little bit more aggressive and potentially get the eagle. I think that brings some better score separation into the mix, but also doesn't take big numbers out of play per se. So I think that could be a fun way of playing it.
How doesn't it take big numbers out of play?
Yeah, the big numbers are gone. It totally eliminates the blow-up.
You can still throw out of bounds on the first tee shot and the second tee shot. So,
I guess that's
just you sucking. You would take a big number if you're throwing out of bounds on your first three.
I mean,
shots,
They're still demanding shots. It takes extremely large numbers out of play. Like you're going to limit it to maybe a single to a double bogey. And honestly, what do you like seeing people's lives get ruined on a hole?
No, but I think hazard is a bad idea because it would make it a par fest, or people would just chuck it OB and get a birdie putt. I think a great rule for that hole would have been the bunker rule, which makes you re-throw without a penalty shot. Like that.
There you go. I always forget about that rule. Because it only
yeah, like they it did, only really they used to happens do it at European Open. Yeah, I think it is fair enough, especially for MPO's field, to make it a bunker rule. I think that the OB and rethrow, if you don't cross, a bit too harsh. But I mean, everyone in our field should be able to pull that shot off. I don't know. Let's say 7 out of 10 times you should hit that island from the landing zone. You
or
should
at least cross,
or at least cross. I mean, crossing could even be debated. Like a 8, 9 out of 10 times you should be able to do that. It's like, what is it, 180 feet, kind of just straight shot with about a 50 feet room. Like that is not too much to ask. On the other hand, for the FPO, it was clearly a disaster and a mistake. To play that hole the way they did. I would say for the ladies, hazard would potentially make sense. And for the MPO, bunker rule, I think would be the best way to play that hole. But overall, I like the hole. I just think that final shot for FPO was too demanding, and for MPO, a bit too punishing. As we saw, like Heimberg, for example, one of the top three players in the world, meltdown.
I think one of the toughest things is that you get to the landing zone, and then, of course, you're throwing your most confident disc on the approach shot. And then if you don't make it with your most confident disc, then you're starting to throw discs that you would never throw on that shot, and that's what makes it hard.
That is true.
I would have hoped that you would have practiced that shot with, like, two other discs, though, in practice, in anticipation of that exact scenario. Because, like, if you didn't, then you're just, like, assuming you're
going to
be
perfect.
Well,
there wasn't a lot of time to practice.
No, for sure. I agree. But, like, if I was – obviously, I didn't compete. If I was either division, I would have spent a dedicated – now, if you have cards behind you, if you got people in front of you, I get it. That situation is unique. But I would have definitely found some time to dedicate to that upshot. I agree with Simon 100%. I think it's too difficult for FPO from the short side of the stairs. Last year for U.S. Women's, they had it. Essentially, the OB just kept going over the stairs and lined both sides. So any shot that faded would end up OB, but you could take it from those spots up across the stairs, basically. I spoke with Jeff Spring about this hole, actually, after the tournament, and he had a really good idea. First of all, Simon, your bunker rule, I think, is awesome. I love that idea. I don't want to make it hazard. I want that shot to be demanding and terrifying for players. Jeff Spring had a really good idea, which was to put some more dirt and flat spot at the top of those stairs, like make a level place to throw from, maybe like 9 by 10 feet or something like that, and put the OB up to the backside of that flat space, which essentially would allow anybody who wants to throw the shot without having to go over the stairs to basically putt up to that edge and then throw a super simple 160 foot wide open shot over. The only thing that I don't like is then if you miss, I suppose if you use bunker rule, it's instant rethrow, so you don't advance. That's where I like that, because the only thing I didn't like about his idea was that essentially if you mess up once, then you get to go and take it from the top of the stairs and throw into the island from there. So I like that bunker rule, basically, but creating that flat spot up on top I think would solve a lot of problems for FPO. It would allow them to essentially take a more aggressive approach and play it up to the top of the stairs, which right now is not a good playing area. Obviously, it's out of bounds as well, but even when it was in bounds, it's not like a great spot to throw from or a consistent spot to land on. So, very interesting hole. Obviously, will probably end up being one of the hardest holes to scoring average. Will it be? What do you guys think? You think it'll be the hardest hole in the season?
Yeah.
There were some pretty large numbers on that hole.
I agree.
What was the damage for you, Simon? Did you par?
No, I went bogey, par, and I should have went birdie, but obviously I messed up. And I mean, round one, I thought a perfect third shot to the green, and it like kind of like bunny hopped on the backside and went OB, which was really unfortunate. And then I kind of just laid up for a bogey, and then the second round, I messed up my second shot. I was in position off the tee. It's really hard to be out of position off the tee. And I hit one of those guardian branches, and it kind of forced me to lay up my third shot. And then I put it on the island from there and made a pretty good putt for par to finish the round. And, I mean, all of my groups, there wasn't really any blow-ups that I saw. Paul McBeth, the way he played it, his third shot, he just took a fairway driver and like threw it really hard and really high into the trees behind the green.
Simon style.
And this just kind of like hit the branches and then like floated backwards to parked in the second round I played with Paul. So that was an interesting way to play that hole, I thought. But I think he took an 8 round one or something, a 7 or an 8. And I think he just didn't want to mess with that again. So he just kind of went full send, which, you know, it's also a way to play the hole for kind of a...
And he parked it? It came back?
Yeah, I mean, it was like 20 feet maybe. So it was for Paul parked. I mean, the way Paul putts, I think it is mention worthy. The way Paul putts 20 footers is it looks like he's just throwing a tap in. Like he takes 0 seconds and it looks like he's literally 5 feet.
He'll putt with his bag on from 30
feet.
Yeah,
I mean, no one else does it like that. Like a 20-footer for everyone is at least like a 2-second thought and a bit of a tester. But McBeth, I don't know if he just like doesn't care, if it's so easy for him. He will just like pick up his disc and look at the basket for 1 second and putt, tap in. Which I always find pretty impressive. But yeah, Paul had a blow-up hole on the par 5. What is it, hole 11, I think? I think he took a 9.
Hole 11.
Yeah, 11. You're right, 11.
Yeah, he threw a perfect tee shot, and then he went for it, ended up short, went for it again, ended up short, went for it again, and then he went OB long of the basket, which is like the furthest shot I've ever seen him throw. I think he threw a disc that was a bit more understable than he wanted, because the two discs he wanted to throw were already OB. So that thing just sailed on him, and then he missed like that 25-footer for 8 and took a 9. So by hole 18, he was probably just like fed up again by this course, which there I thought the only... course was actually a good course.
That was my next question.
I think it's a great course. Once it has grass instead of wood chips, it's going to be one of the prettiest courses I think we've ever seen. But right now, of course, it's a bit on the rough side. It's still brand new. It was put in like a year and a half ago. So it's like still fresh. And for what it is, it's pretty amazing what they did to make it so playable and good in that short amount of time. It's obviously not great for spectators. It's maybe not the greatest course on camera because it can get a bit repetitive and confusing on where people are going, what the landing zones are, what's a good and what's a bad spot. It just doesn't translate very easily and well, I think, on camera. But I think it's a very challenging and fun course. And I think shooting double digits on that course is pretty freaking amazing.
Yeah, there was only... I looked at this on Saturday. I think there was only 3 or 4 guys who birdied 18 both days. And Kyle Klein, who shot double digits both days at Sprinkle Valley, he got it. I want to say Ezra Robinson, Jason Lawson, and maybe, I don't know if it was Ben Callaway. It was like 3 or 4 people who went.
It definitely wasn't Ben Callaway.
I think it might have just been 3 people. And maybe only four or five more people who even shot under par total on that hole for the weekend. So very, very intimidating final hole, but the rest of the course as well was really, really cool, I thought. And I think, yes, there's definitely like some spots where spectators have difficulty being at, but like, I think the venue makes up for a lot of that. The spectating that you can do on hole 10, on hole 1, it's pretty easy to get out to a lot of those holes. Obviously, the brewery being right there with the food truck. But then, that back half on the field is actually pretty spectator-friendly. They did a lot of good job with, in my opinion, with 11, 12, 16, 17, 18. Being really great for people who are watching, because you basically just stay in the same spot and all the holes just kind of play around you. So I thought that was really cool.
Do you want to hear my favorite thing about the course?
The taco truck.
There, that if I was eating tacos, it would have been my favorite. My favorite thing about Sprinkle Valley was there was very little speculation, or usually when we're playing a course, we just think to ourselves, gosh, if I had a chainsaw and chopped down this one tree in the middle, this would be a good hole. Pretty much every single hole didn't have that tree in the middle of the fairway.
I totally agree.
The lines were super clean.
The lines were clean. Like, if you threw a clean shot down the middle of the fairway, you're going to get rewarded. And I think a lot of courses can take
the only
that. There was barely any Twizzlers. I'd say like maybe hole 3, kind of. There's like two trees on the left side that kind of are in the line, but also not in the way at the same time. But other than that, it's like pretty solid.
The only inconsistencies out there would have been on the wood chips on the ground play. Like sometimes you're playing for the skip, you don't get it. Sometimes you do. But I agree, the airspace was super consistent.
Yeah, it's really rare that I have zero complaints with a course. I think this was as fair of a course as it gets, basically, like minus the ground play. But I think they're working on, I talked to the owner, and they're planning to seed the whole place with grass. And, I mean, once that is done, I actually think it's going to be one of the best courses in the world.
I'm very much looking forward to this event each year because of the way that they have really developed the properties, and especially huge shout out, honestly, to Jeff Spring and the rest of the Pro Tour staff for the work that they've done on Harvey Pennock. It is really one of my favorite golf courses that we play, and it just doesn't even feel like it that much. And they've put in a ton of work on those wooded holes, and it was so exciting to be right there for the final round and watch that crazy battle take place.
I agree. I thought Harvey Pennock was great too. All the changes they made, I think, were good changes. There's no unfair holes. Overall, I loved it. I mean, it's a bit sad that I played such a bad third round that I kicked myself out of the whole event. And I mean, my luck factor that whole week was on one of the lowest sides I've ever seen. Like, I got no love from any kind of ground play, from any kind of kicks, from any OB lines. It was always, I was definitely struggling with the victim mentality there. And I would lie if I said I had the best mindset, especially round 3, where I just felt like no matter what I do, it's going to go bad. And once you tap into that mindset, it's really hard to turn around, and it's obviously even harder to start getting good breaks.
That's what happened to me, too.
Brutal.
I felt like nothing ever good again was going to happen to me.
This is so unfortunate. Like,
you know who also felt that way in the middle of the final round?
Kyle Klein.
He felt that way the third round and the fourth round, but I only spoke to him a few times in the third round. I was out spectating with a local buddy of mine I took out to his first ever pro tour, but he asked me on Saturday night at our weekly our traditional steak night, which was another hit. He asked me if I would walk with him the final round. For those who don't know, I've caddied more rounds for Kyle than anybody else on tour. I think 4 USDGCs now, 3 USDGCs and a European Open, and then a handful of other rounds sprinkled in. And I mean, honestly, I agree with him. I mean, he threw some really, really, really good shots that got some wickedly bad breaks. I mean, hole 4, the downhill par 3, he threw, in my opinion, the best shot of the group, and he just so happened to skip on the dirt path, and he skipped like 100 feet out of bounds. And
I did the same thing.
Yeah. And
it's the same boat.
Yep. And
the sad thing is that when you talk about it yourself, you're wanting somebody to comfort you, but in reality, no one cares except
that's
you.
Correct.
Because like when something happens like that, it's like you're like looking around you. Sometimes you're like, oh my gosh, I'm expecting somebody to let me rethrow because that's unreal that that just happened. But life just goes on and you have to deal with it. You have to suffer the freaking pain and snap out of the victim mentality. But in most cases, even if you go into the tournament with a strong mindset, oh, it gets withered away. It gets shattered. By the end of the tournament, you are thinking about giving your bag to the people who've watched you all around because you feel like you owe them something.
I agree.
It's really difficult to get out of it when it sets upon you. And basically, Kyle was in that mental space where basically very few things he felt like could go right. And it was sort of a stunning switch from Sprinkle Valley, where he had shredded both rounds. And he missed his eagle putt on 11 and hit the band on like a 35-footer up the hill on 12. And I mean, at that point, he was out of it mentally. And he was tied at that point still.
That's not bad luck to miss putts.
No. I'm just saying, like, the bad luck happened earlier on in the round. And then he, at that point, just, like, was trying to save something with it. And barely missing two putts was, like, exactly the perfect deflation in his mind. And I was just like, look, dude, you're still tied. And I basically said what Eagle just said, which is just, like, you know, I know you want somebody to, like, tell you that you can rethrow and you can, like, start over, but, like, this is the reality and you're still tied in this tournament and, like, you have to go take this and, like, no matter what you think is gonna kick you horribly off of every shot going forward, you have to try to push through that and go steal this win. And while he did enter that round with a 3-stroke lead, I would still say that the way he performed at the end of that final round was really impressive because he basically did snap out of it and he birdied 3 holes in a row and then forced a playoff. And it was insane. It was insane to watch him dig his heels in and essentially stop the slide. And birdieing 17 was like the first time I felt like he had gotten like a super good break.
Amazing break.
And he turned around after and he looks at me and he goes, about time. And I was like, see, you just got to put your head down and like stick to the process. And I mean, yeah, if he had.
He threw a hyzer on a turnover hole.
Yep. And it worked.
That was so wild.
But it was a crazy finish. And obviously huge shout out to Niklas who just, I mean, he showed no emotion the entire round. He made all his putts.
Watching Niklas was so inspiring to me, but also slightly deflating because Niklas is a player that when he is on, he looks like he is in the total driver's seat. The way he lines up his shot, the way he lines up his putts, it's like when he executes a shot, it looks exactly how it's supposed to. It's butter. Oh my gosh, his technique, like throwing 18, he just lining up his shot so stoically. He has his unique reach back, just perfect extension, and just laser beam right down the fairway. It was like, it made me want to go practice.
He piped that shot both times, 18 and playoff hole one. It was perfect with this super, super old S-line PD. Man, I mean, it's got to be like third run, something like that. Super, super old. No, nothing on it even. It looks like it's already starting to plasticize. One of those old discs. And yeah, he deserved it. I mean, even his first upshot in regulation was money, except for that he squared up the one big tree in the way, and then he basically just threw barely to the left of it in the playoff.
Yeah, I would argue to say that it didn't come out of his hand as exactly how he wanted it to on his approach. Like, I think he threw a C-line tactic on his approach shot. And he probably wanted just a little bit more turn, but it leaked out of his hand just a little left, but obviously he was close enough. But
that was the leftness that he needed to miss that tree. I mean, if he had turned it more, he would have squared it just like he did in regulation. I mean, he squeaked past it on the left side. So, huge shout-out to Niklas.
Every time I play with Niklas, I question how I ever beat him. It is, yeah. He throws the best shots I've seen from anyone ever. And the purest lines with the most, just, it looks like he's throwing on a rope.
Mm-hmm.
And no one else does it. I mean, when Isaac Robinson is on, I would say it's similar. But almost every time I play with Niklas, no one else throws like that.
It's
no one else throws like as straight and as perfect as Niklas, in my opinion.
It's like,
I just can't believe it.
If this is the thing, it's like ASMR for the eyes when Niklas throws.
And I was more impressed with his putting than anything. ASMR for the eyes.
Uh-huh.
I like that. His putting was unbelievable. The amount of like stressful 25 to 35 footers that he made, that he didn't just squeak, he hearted basically every single putt that round. There was like no doubt in me and Kyle's mind by the end of it that he was going to make basically every putt he stepped up to.
And
it was super, super impressive.
The thing I like to add is that it gives people like me hope, because I'm going to go out on a whim and say, Niklas hasn't had the best start to the season. If you look at some of his past events, I don't think he cashed in Florida. And then the Go Throw event, I think he was pretty far down the list. And he came back for the Open in Austin with a vengeance. He wanted to defend his title. He turned it on, and he just proved that he's a force to be reckoned with. And he's one of your picks, right? Right, Joey?
Yeah, it segues beautifully. And not only is he one of my picks, but I dissed him in the last episode saying if I had to redo my picks. And then I said, sorry, Niklas. And I was listening to that on the drive away from Austin on Monday. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I said that. Just regretting my stuff before I let it play out. Let's do the points updates. It's a lot tighter than it was last week. In third place, we have Eagle McMahon, 1,499.61 points. Second place, we have Joey T, 1,656.5. And leading the way, still, Simon Lizotte, 1,773.45. So his lead has shrunk by about 200 points from last update. It is very close now.
Yeah, it was a rough week for Lazat's team.
I mean, Holland is still... I owe an apology to Holland because I didn't take her with my wraparound first 3-4 picks, and she is not only leading the tour standings, she is dominating the tour standings. I mean, she is almost 100 points clear of her best friend, Ella Hansen, in second place. So very, very impressive. Her worst finish right now is second place. So huge shout out to Holland Hanley for taking it down in dramatic fashion. I should also note that was a very impressive. I don't know how much you guys watched of the FPO, but we watched the last few holes, and that was, I mean, Kristen was charging, and Holland was in a similar spot to a lot of tournaments that she has lost with a lead and just couldn't quite slam the door the way I think everybody wants to when they have a lead. And we watched it happen at Worlds, and we watched it happen at Supreme Flight twice. And yeah, Kristen had a maybe 70-footer that she hit off the top of the basket for the playoff. And yeah, Holland did enough work on the third round. She tied the record for most consecutive birdies by an FPO player in Elite Series history, or at least stat-keeping history, which was 12, I think. Or maybe, no, 9, 10, yeah, maybe it was 10. But she birdied the entire back nine on round 3, and that was super impressive. I don't think I've seen that in a while from an FPO player. And then started off round 4 with, I think, 2 birdies, or maybe it was just 1, and she missed the putt on hole 2 to tie it. I can't remember, honestly, but very impressive effort from Holland Hanley. And, I think that's our Austin recap right there. Simon, do you want to whine? Simon
whines! I always like to whine. I can just keep whining from my Austin performance. Simon whines! No, let's do a whine about airports. Simon whines! I love airports. I spend a lot of time in airports. But there's two main things that drive me crazy at airports, and it's not really the airport's fault. It's the human race's fault, as basically every problem in the world. Okay, this whine is about the lines that form in front of the gate that go into the walkway for no reason at all. Everyone knows there's boarding groups, but they still choose to stand in front of the gate, like 5 to 10 minutes before boarding even starts, and they stand into the walkway, so everyone has to like squeeze by and squeeze through that's just trying to walk to wherever they need to go. And it's like, what are you doing? And they're just standing there in the way. It's in the way people that annoy me and make me want to whine. And I'm just like looking and like, what are you doing? Like, why do you, you could be sitting and just waiting until it's your time to board, but you choose to stand in the way. Okay, that's number one. And number two, baggage claim. When you're standing at the baggage claim, you should be standing so far away from the belt that other people that have a bag to grab can easily walk in and grab their bag without having to, like, press through everyone who's standing freaking 5 feet away from the claim and just waiting for their bag. Like, what is that? Why don't people have common sense and make room for other people that need to grab their bag? Everyone stands right there waiting for their bag, making it so hard for everyone else to go just grab their bag. It would be so easy just to stand 15 feet away, and when you see your bag, you walk up and grab it. Like, I don't understand. Like, what's wrong with people just to make room for other people? Like, you have to stand right at the belt? Like, what is that?
We might be the most intelligent species on the planet, but if you want to make us look the most like animals, put us in an airport.
I mean, it's just like basic things, and just like it seems like just common sense, but for some reason, some people just don't know when they're in the way, and I wish people would be more aware of that.
The line one makes sense. It's like the plane's there. You can see it. It's not leaving. You have a ticket. They're going to do like 3 or 4 last calls, and if you're sitting right there, you're not like sprinting to the gate to get in. I have recently in the last 4 years started just waiting till the end, basically. I just sit. If I have a good spot at the gate, I just wait. Why would I stand in line? If I then, the other thing too is you stand in the line and you scan your boarding pass and then you walk about 20 feet down onto that skyway and stand in another line only to wait and get into your seat after about another 15 minutes. So
if you want to stand and wait, okay, but don't stand in the way of walkways where people are trying to get to their gate or get to their baggage claim or whatever. Like, I'm okay with standing. Do whatever you want, but don't stand in the way.
They're just waiting for their boarding group to be called. And they're waiting way too close.
Yeah, everybody's like so excited.
They're like group six, but they're standing in the way of group one.
Have you ever tried to go in on a group that you weren't assigned to? Like, if you were group six and just, like, board in with group one? They started kind of ratcheting down on that, but
yeah.
I think like 3 or 4 years ago anybody could do that if you just made it seem like you were in the right group. And they weren't. I mean, you scan your pass face down, so if they're not looking at it, just walk right in. I also, hot take or another wine, they should board the plane in reverse. If you're at the back of the plane, like, why don't they board the back row first?
Totally.
Obviously, if you're a plane that has the two, I love the planes that, well, that have the two entrances. Yeah. Those planes obviously are the ones where you can't use those skyways except for maybe super huge planes, but mostly those ones you got to go out onto the tarmac. But that seems to be a lot faster when
very
you have
common
a little
in
staircase.
Europe.
Yeah, but just it should be standard in every airport that the back rows go on first. I think it would make it so much faster. Maybe I'm wrong.
One of my pet peeves is when you land, and as soon as the seatbelt light goes off and we get to the gate, everyone gets out of their seat as fast as they can, and
it's bad.
Like, it's like you're not getting off the plane that quick. You got to wait, and everyone is just like, it's cutthroat. They got to get off the plane as soon as they possibly can, and in reality, they're saving like 5 seconds of their life.
Well, and then they wait for 5 minutes at the baggage claim anyway. And
yeah,
keep
5 minutes
getting
in
your
the
bag.
Ideal world. No, all in all, I want to say also that I think airplanes are amazing. Airports are amazing, and I'm thankful for them. It's not their fault that humans are just not using common sense in some scenarios.
An airport is like a freeway without the cars. The same amount of innate human aggression and stupidity without the 2,000-pound metal boxes to enclose everyone.
Yeah, it's pretty mind-blowing. It is mind-boggling. All right, what's next?
All right. You want to do something, Eagle?
You can do something.
Let's do.
Let's hear your ranking.
What I'm going to do is for you guys. So we're going to do blind ranking. And usually we do 5, but this time we're going to do 8. And what we are blind ranking is top tournament courses not currently on tour. So these are courses that I think I made sure all of you guys have played all of these, I think. And I just thought that they were good courses for competition. Doesn't necessarily mean they're like heavily birdieable or not, just what would make a good pro tour course, not including like any of the amenities, just the 18 holes of disc golf. Are you guys ready?
Ready.
I was born ready.
Okay. Do you want me to keep track of where you put these?
Yeah.
All right. Wait then.
This is your segment, Joey.
I know.
I need to think of a segment while you're doing your segment.
We want advice.
What do you want advice on?
How to play better disc golf.
I want advice too.
Maybe we should have Niklas on.
Here we go.
Don't worry. Be happy.
All right. Are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The first course is Moraine Lake State Park in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Is that the one with Wait, which one is that? Moraine? Is that where you like start in the woods and then you have this long par five on like the top of the hill kind
the
of?
The open, top of the hill. And then that the final shot is the one that you threw that crazy tee shot on. That,
okay, I know what course.
Yeah.
You played it for Worlds and the Pittsburgh Flying Disc Open, which was an NT in like 2017.
And we have to put it at 1 through 5?
1 through 8.
1 through 8. Oh, okay. So let's do this quick, long segment. I will put that at 5. It's good, but not that good.
I'll put it at 5 as well.
Yes.
That feels right.
All right. Next course, Fountain Hills.
Ooh, I'll put Fountain Hills at 3. Because I'm a huge fan of it, and I think it needs to come back.
I'm going to put it at 4. I played it this year, and it's pretty special, but it also is pretty outdated. But I want to go back.
All right, next course. Harmony Bends.
Harmony Bends. Oh. Well, we got to think of it in perfect conditions, right? When it's not a swamp fest. Okay,
correct.
Harmony Bends in perfect conditions. I'm going to put that at 4. Because it is
under fountain.
Very good.
Under Fountain Hills. Look at that. This is why I was excited for this.
I've never played Harmony Bends.
Dang it.
Oh.
So what does what do I do? Do I just give it a ranking?
Yeah.
I'm not going to rank it. I can't rank it confidently.
That's fair. So. That's fair. All right. Next one. Iron Hill.
8. Oh. 8. I do not like the course at all, but sorry for everyone who loves it. But that course is not fair. I think way too many good shots get punished and bad shots can get so lucky there. It's like totally out of whack.
Those rocks are so jagged. I think I got to go 8 as well.
Well, for you, it's 7 now.
Oh, 7.
Okay.
We're making a lot of people cry right now.
Next up, Roy G.
Oh, baby.
Oh, baby.
I'm going to have to put it at 2.
Wow.
This is in Austin, Texas. And, I mean, every time I go there, I am not disappointed. I'm actually like, wow, this is what disc golf could be. And I know that there's plans for us to go there. I'm not sure what exactly is holding us back, but from the talks I had in Austin last week, it really sounds like there's a good chance that we'll end up there one day. It's just the perfect combination of cute and sexy.
Somebody remind me in the comments, did they rebuild the bridge that got washed out? I heard. Through
no
the grapevine
idea.
That happened. That was one of the big kind of stabs to the heart of Roy G back in the day when it was kind of maybe on its way to being one of those. They lost that huge bridge, which kind of disconnected that big parking lot from hole one and made it a lot more of an isolated course.
I'd say number 2.
Wow. Because
I think I know what's coming on this list, and
we're waiting for the big hitters.
Roy G's a big hitter.
Roy G's a big hitter.
I have 1, 6, and 7 left. But...
All right. Next one. This is a throwback. I almost forgot about this course, but I'm saying it anyway. Glen Eagles.
Former host of
the San Francisco Open. The golf course.
Who was I talking about that course with? Seth, right? Oh, yeah, Seth. Seth Muncy, who's now the operator of safety for the tour.
Yeah.
Health and safety.
That course was not on the safe side. Right? No, it was not.
It was not on the safe side.
Yeah, the parking lot was a bit sketch because people's cars were getting...
The venue was not safe.
Yeah, people's cars were getting broken into and it was just... The course itself, pretty dang cool. Like that property, I wasn't in love with the course design, but the property had so much potential. It was really, really cool. And my list is going to be messed up now because I don't want to put it at one. And I only have 6 and 7 left, so I'm going to have to put it at 6.
Wait. Oh, yeah. You do. Sorry.
I'll put it at 6 because that's the highest spot under one that I have left. But it would be above Moraine and Harmony Bends. But it's at 6.
Do I have 3?
You do.
I will put it at 3. I think Sean Jack was the TD for that event, who is now the TD for OTB Open / Champions Cup. I liked that property better than Swenson Park. I always thought it was just like, I felt like I was playing disc golf in a video game. It felt like a simulation out there. It was
cool.
The elevation, the San Francisco fog. It was a very unique disc golf experience. Same with the one course we played in Monterey, or whatever it's called.
St. Jude Invitational.
St. Jude, Bayonet Black. That was another really cool course on a ball golf course.
Right on the ocean.
All right. We've got 2 left. Yeah, yep. 2 left. All right. Next one up on the list is Blue Lake in Portland, Oregon.
Ooh.
Formerly on the Disc Golf Pro Tour as the host of the Portland Open before we moved to Glendevere. Honestly, similar situation to Roy G, where mostly it's because of issues with the park and the city trying to reserve that space for an entire week.
Yeah, I like that course. It's a pretty park. Course design's pretty good as well. It's a good mix of shots. Obviously, location is very good, right near Portland. But I'm going to have to put it at 7. And I think it belongs there. It's good, but not really like that. It doesn't feel like a must play for me.
So you guys are both going to end up with your number one slot available. And there's no changing it.
This one better be the one, Jerry.
You're assuming I don't put Blue Lake at number one.
Oh, you know what? I guess we still have... Did I do more than 8? Oh, I did. Sorry. Guess I didn't count right. 1.
Hell yeah.
So
I did 9.
You did.
So I have 1 and 9 left. Perfect.
So for me, I have 1 and 6 left?
Yeah.
You have 1 and 6
and 9.
But technically and 9.
1, 6
or
and
8.
And 8.
1, 6 and 8.
Blue Lake, number 8. I always, or not, no, I'm confused now.
You have 8,
well,
number 6,
and 1.
Number 6, I want number 6 to be Blue Lake. When I play Blue Lake, it feels like I'm playing in the Midwest, not in Oregon.
Yeah, it's true,
I
agree.
It's just like a park. I don't feel like I'm in Oregon when I'm playing at Blue Lake, but I'll put it at 6. I have good and bad memories from that course. Mostly
okay, so now
bad.
You guys both have your bottom and top spots left for 2 courses to go.
Classic.
Next up on the list, De La Viega.
9. Instant 9. I think is... I mean, the history behind it, awesome. I bet playing back there back in the day was like a super special, cool spot. If I lived there, I would play it for fun all the time. For tournament golf, no thank you. Way too random.
I'll put it at 8, but you know, I would love to play a go-throw event out there. That would be perfect. A non-sanctioned big event. Love it.
And as cool as that final shot is, the top of the world shot, hole, what is it, 27 or in tournament? I don't know. They played like random number of holes every year. They're like 22 holes or something.
Yeah.
As cool as that shot is, it is probably the least safe shot or least safe hole in the world. Like the fact that no one has had a serious accident happen there is kind of mind blowing. Like I've almost been hit by discs coming in at 80 miles an hour down the cliff. Like it's unbelievable. The amount of cars that get hit in the parking lot, it's very questionable. But, you know, legendary at the same time.
All right, well, the last one.
Number one, baby, give it to us.
Number one. I think you guys are going to be actually okay with this. Eagles Crossing.
Yeah, Eagles Crossing. That course is about two chainsaws away from being unbelievably good.
I haven't played the new course on the property. I hear people like that one better.
Well, that would be really exciting. Now it's a complex that's world class.
Yeah, I'm good with the list. I think my list is pretty solid.
Were there any courses that I missed that you were thinking I was going to say? I'm curious.
Jonesboro?
Oh, yeah. Wow. What the heck? I'm here, too.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that course is basically on tour still, even though it's not on tour.
Yeah, and it will be on tour next year, so.
The Fort?
The Fort in Utah?
The Fort?
Oh,
I didn't want to get Mulligans? Laughed at. Oh my goodness. I was thinking maybe Caliper in Idaho,
I haven't played it.
But I don't. Yeah, I figured one of you, or maybe both of you, hadn't. Have you played it, Eagle?
Mm-mm. No.
Okay. And then I was thinking of my home state, but there wasn't really. I mean, Blue Ribbon Pines is great, but you guys haven't played it in the 18-hole tournament layout that they have, which then it's not really a fair judgment when you play the whole course with the little wacky holes in there. So anyway, that's it. Top 8, top 9 courses for tournament play that are not on tour. Thanks for playing, boys. That was fun. I had fun dreaming up all those and remembering all the rounds I've played at these places.
They all deserve to be remembered. That's for sure.
Thanks for lining it up, Joey.
All right, Bird.
Well, I didn't have anything to start the day, so I've been thinking about what I could talk about, and I'm just going to do an unsolicited advice. I was looking around my van to see what I could give advice on. I was looking at a car vacuum, and I thought, you should get a vacuum for your car. And I'm like, no, that's not good. I was looking at my Yeti cooler. I'm like, you can keep snacks cool in your cooler. That's not a good one. But I think the best thing I can talk about, and Joey would attest to this, is not sponsored, Santa Cruz Paleo. Speaking of Santa Cruz, De La Vega, electrolytes. They're my favorite electrolytes. They're a salt-based electrolyte that have sodium, magnesium, and potassium, which if some people may be familiar to the brand Element, same sort of concept. When you're sweating, you are depleting yourself of minerals, and by reintroducing them via an electrolyte powder, you are hydrating more effectively. And compared to Element, Santa Cruz Paleo has incredible flavors, and the taste is off the chart. Right, Joey?
Oh, it's so good. I have never really been a huge electrolyte guy, and also I've never been a big lemonade guy, which is super weird that that's my go-to. That's the only ones I buy are lemonade and lemon lime.
Joey, you strike me like such a lemonade guy.
It was too much. Is it bitter or sour? What's the lemon? Is it sour?
It's sour. And a so bad lemonade can't be bitter.
Yeah, so it was like lemonade was always like a little too much going on, and I wanted it to be like a bit watered down maybe, which is, I think, not what you want for any other drink. You never really want to water your stuff down. But so water was always the thing that would like quench my thirst the most until I found water with Santa Cruz Paleo electrolytes in it. So I go for the lemonade and lemon lime flavors. They come in these little jars, and Oh my goodness, they're so good. I chugged 46 ounces yesterday. And it also feels like I do have to drink less overall water.
It feels good. It feels good. Like, mm-hmm. I'll fill up my Hydro Flask each day, and the first thing I put in my water is the electrolytes and a scoop of creatine. Mm-hmm. And I would say if you're looking for flavor recommendations, the first flavor I try is lemonade, personally. That's my one of my favorite flavors. Next would be starfruit. Starfruit is really good. Basically tastes like lemonade. And if you like to get a little bit tropical, or you feel a little bit fruity, lychee. That's another really good flavor. But
wait, is it lychee or lychee? I thought it's lychee.
I mean, it's spelled lychee.
Oh, so, did I say it wrong my whole life? That's sad.
I know what you're talking about. You can call it what you want.
Okay.
But it's super solid. It's like, it just, those flavors are very clean. Like, if you've had other electrolytes in the past, then you may have noticed like an artificial taste. And this is just super, super clean, very refreshing, and zero sugar, like compared to a lot of other electrolytes, cane sugar in them. And you could make an argument that you're replenishing glycogen when you're exerting energy or you're doing something athletic. But personally, I'd rather have these electrolytes plus like a banana or an orange, something more natural. But if you're looking for more than just
electrolytes as well. They do more than just the... I recently purchased their magnesium potassium caps, and I take two of those before bed every night, and it's they're incredible. Very good company. Not sponsored.
Yeah. I would love to be sponsored by them. They're one of my favorite brands. I buy a decent amount of stuff for them, and they have a good Amazon storefront. So if you're a Prime member, then there you go.
Great segment.
Well, boys, what do you got lined up this coming week?
Oh man, just slowly throwing again. I think today maybe we might go over to Craighead. Have you guys played there before?
Nope.
I've parked there and used the camping facilities, but I've never played the course.
So yeah, I might go throw a few holes there. We'll see. Just like slowly ramping up into playing disc golf again, and then oil change and a haircut. That's on the list for today. So, and then yeah, driving to Nashville on Sunday. So looking forward to seeing you boys. Well, I guess, Simon, I'll see you Tuesday night. But yeah, that's on the docket. Are you just hanging in Huntsville, Eagle, and then going up on Sunday?
More or less. Getting a little bit of practice here in the Huntsville area. Actually going down to Kudzu Cove, which is a very special place because that's where I first hung out with Ratana in person. So we have a special little history there. We're meeting with our friends who work there, and they get us a nice little cabin. So we'll have a...
Is it the same cabin?
It's not the same cabin. It's kind of a different cabin every time we go, but we always look at the cabin and we're like, that's where we met. That's where the spark turned into a fire. But yeah, it'll be good. And then on Sunday, we might head up to Clarksville because Ratana has a cat up there that lives with her sister, and we need to take it to the vet for its annual checkup. So that's what's on my docket.
That's my episode name. Ratana has a cat.
I don't think episode name.
ASMR for the eyes.
Oh yeah, that's good.
ASMR for the eyes.
What are you doing, Simon? We want to hear what you got coming.
Just catching up on some house chores and
baby stuff.
Well, spending time with the kids as much as possible, of course. I only get a handful of days with them every other week now for the season, so gotta suck it all in when you get a chance. And then on Tuesday, I'm headed back on tour. Nashville, I'm trying to three-peat aka four-peat, because I won the tournament in 2015 as well. We'll see. And then we're back to the grind. And then I'm going back home for a week.
Three-time Music City Open champion? Three-time?
Yeah, I've played it three times, and I've won every time.
I didn't know it was called Music City in 2015. That's crazy.
It was. So, and back then, you know, it's Schusterich's stomping grounds. And in 2015, to beat Schusterich at his home courses was actually pretty special.
Where was it? Was it in Nashville still at Cedar Hill? Or was it somewhere else in Tennessee?
I think we played two or three courses for this tournament. One of them was Seven Oaks or something, maybe?
Seven Oaks. Yep.
The other one was Cedar Hill. And then I think we even played a third course. I think it was kind of it was a crazy event back then.
Well, Scoville Units, thanks for listening.
Somebody yesterday, I was playing Bronze Spring. They came up to me and said, "Eagle, I'm a Scoville unit."
Nice.
You're out there. I appreciate you. Thank you.
So you're saying that our fans and listeners are real people too, that we might run into?
They're real.
Well, yeah, if you see us out in the wild, come up and say hi.
I'll send us off with the last quick thing. When I was at the airport yesterday, I actually ran into a fan. It happens probably about once a trip, maybe every other trip, where you get recognized and someone comes up to you, and this kid on the younger side, maybe 19 to 25 in that area. It's always so hard to guess people's ages nowadays. But he like looked at me with like the widest eyes I've ever seen and just so in awe, which just felt absolutely surreal. And he was like, "Oh, I just got back from Hawaii and I've been subscribed to your channel since 2019 or 2018. Like, he's been there from the start, and he said he watches every video. And I'm like, he's like one of my biggest fans. And he asked me for a hug, which was a first for me, which was awesome. So that was fun. And then I gave him a signed disc out of my bag. Rest in peace to my Fireball.
It was about time. It was about time.
Yeah, I've been talking about that disc for a while. So that disc found a much happier owner and home now, happy for the Fireball. And yeah, that was a fun and cool little interaction, just to see the effect that we can have on some kids out there is pretty crazy, because obviously we are so, I mean, disc golf famous, but at the same time, most people in the world obviously have no idea who we are. But when something like that happens, it definitely feels like pretty wild. I was like, holy cow, this is like real.
That's great. Should we tease our practice round guest for the Scoville Units listening for next week? It's a very, very, very special guest. One that probably the most commented request for a practice round guest since we started doing that.
I'll give him the hint. It's not gold. It's not copper. But it's... There you go.
Yeah, good.
Perfect.
I'm excited for that. Who knows what's going to happen? We'll make it happen regardless.
We're going to make it happen.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you so much for listening.
And
if you're playing disc golf this weekend, I wish you no bogeys.
Next week. Eagle, are you parking at our Airbnb, or do you have other plans?
I don't know what I'm doing yet.
Okay. Well, we'll probably do a podcast in person again next week, so that'll be easier.
Perfect.
Okay. All right, who signs off? We got too many people signing off at this time, so I'm going to dedicate Simon to be the official sign-off person going forward.
No, you hang up first.
Yeah, Simon, you take us to the end.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Huge shout out to Team MVP for all the support. And even though we missed the cut last week, we are professionals and we will bounce back. And we look forward to talking and hearing again next week. Until then, peace and peace.
Pizza, pizza.
Eagle Czech.
Coming to you live from the Czech Republic.
Joey Czech.
Czech. I have nothing good to say. That was good.
The whole point of the Czech is that it's timed properly. So if you pause for 3 seconds, it doesn't work.